I'm trying to think of the way to say good morning in British this morning, James, but I think it's just good morning or top of the morning.
Isn't that Irish?
Oh, that is Irish. Yeah, I don't know.
Why? What's with the British thing?
We got a new patron today or yesterday. Well, I guess it was today, actually. Nick, who's from the UK. And the only reason I know he's from the UK is that his patron sign up was in pounds.
Huh.
Which cool. Is the first. Yeah, I've never seen that happen before.
Nice. I see.
So that's kind of cool.
The hopnology disease continues to spread.
Yeah. My first assumption is that we were hacked when I saw that.
that's
what am I
awesome.
Supposed to think?
Yeah, that's a reasonable conclusion.
Mm-hmm. It is. Like, so, Nick, welcome.
Yeah,
welcome.
Hi, Nick.
We try and switch around our units of measurement as often as possible for our global contingent.
We do, yes. Yep.
I'm constantly, changing measurements and hectares and everything back and forth while James is babbling on.
Given our content that we're going to talk about today, I should start using hogshead and stone.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, I've got to bring up another search engine for all those. All right. So, Nick, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Before we get into our topic du jour, we want to talk about something that happened yesterday. So just for, I say yesterday, this will be like in a month. But on the 26th-ish of December in New Zealand, there was an enormous hailstorm.
Yes.
And there are pictures all over the interwebs of hop fields getting decimated. And it just goes to show you what can happen.
Yeah, specifically our colleagues in Mac Hops in New Zealand. It's just past the solstice. Their plants were full height. They've got sidearms out. And it looks like they shoved the whole hop yard through a paper shredder.
Mm-hmm.
They've got, hail that's 3/4 of an inch in diameter and just, I'd say, an inch to inch and a half thick on the ground. And I'm frankly surprised that the binds are still strung because there's absolutely no foliage on those plants.
None. And I said to you when we were looking at those pictures before, well, what should that be looking like right now? What time of the season is it for them? And you said it's just about harvest.
No, it's just after flowering.
It's after flowering. It should still be a full green field. You should not see the field next door through the vines.
No. It's brutal. But it's just a reminder that, like I said, when Mother Nature shows up, there's no keeping her out.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think I commented to Instagram page. I'm like, yep, been there. But I said, then we farmers shrug and move forward because what else mm-hmm. are you going to do? I mean, you're like, yep.
Yep. It was a very united we stand kind of note you put out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they appreciate it because, everyone's been through all. We were just talking about the fact that in New Zealand and Australia, they finished their harvest right before COVID hit, and they didn't have to last year, and they didn't have to deal nearly as much with all of the issues around that. And then Mother Nature comes and kicks them in the ass anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Just a shame, an absolute shame. So we are thinking of you guys and girls down there.
Absolutely.
That is very rough.
Yep.
So check out some pictures if you haven't seen this, because it is educational, it's scary, and it gives you some appreciation for what can happen. So I didn't know, right? Like I said, it's the 27th now. So, I don't know how many days behind us is New Zealand in terms of the time zones. I don't really know.
I think 16 days.
It's November there. It's November.
In 1972.
Okay. Oh yes. 1972. Yeah. December 26th.
It's some sort of international dateline calculation. I don't know.
And there's a flux capacitor involved.
There is. Well, I was there once, but apparently I don't remember it because it was in the past. But it hasn't happened yet. It's very strange.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. Okay. Clearly, we've had our coffee today.
Clearly, we have.
Yes. All right. Moving on. So we spoke maybe 6 months ago. I don't know. It all blurs together. Again, mm-hmm. because of the being stuck in the basement for so
long. Right.
We spoke about non-alcoholic beer. And it's something we both started to get into. You tried a couple of them, and then you were poking me about it, and I tried a couple of them, and they're shockingly, surprisingly good in a lot of cases. There's also some bad ones.
Well, much like all beer,
mm-hmm.
it's not all good.
Very true. And you've got limited. One big difference here is you can just order it online and have it sent to you.
It's fantastic.
It is. It is. You really don't ever have to leave your house again.
No.
Just deliver beer.
And hallelujah, that's been kind of a savior through these crazy COVID times. From a beer chemistry standpoint and just an innovation standpoint, innovation is not adding more hops or adding another tropical fruity hop or making your beer more hazy. That's not innovating. That's calling finger painting innovating, right? No, it's not innovating. NA beer, from a technical brewing perspective, very, very innovative area. Mm-hmm. And that gets me excited.
Yeah, yeah. Because bottom line is the flavors, the aroma, everything is coming from the alcohol. So to strip out the alcohol or to not have the alcohol from the get-go, and the, you know, a couple different ways of doing this, which we've spoken about already in a lot of detail, to remove that piece and still come up with a familiar beverage, that is, to your point, it's got to be innovation. It's science, and we love our sciencey science around here.
We do love our sciencey science. And just to back up, it's the flavor's not coming from the alcohol. The flavor's coming, and those aromas are being contributed to by fermentation, which produces alcohol.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's all right. It's all intertwined.
Yes. So it's, you know, I thought, well, how do you make this stuff? How do you make low or no alcohol beer? And I mean, there's some legalities here. You see 0.0 for like Heine and Bud and all these other ones that are coming out with these true 0.0 alcohol beers, no alcohol beers. Like in the States, if it's less than 0.5% alcohol by volume, you can call it NA. It's not alcohol free. That's different. It's non-alcoholic. Yeah. Semantics, right? But it's very important from a production standpoint, because there's several methodologies, you know, a brewer can choose to go about producing this kind of beer. But think about what we're doing. We're taking, when we're producing a standard beer, we're taking water, yeast, malted grain of some sort, typically barley and some and or adjuncts, and hops. Making a sugar liquid, you're letting the yeast chew on it. You're adding some heat, you're adding some cold, bada bing, bada boom, there you go, right? It's just that easy. The fermentation process is extremely critical to what we understand as beer flavor. Mm-hmm. Lots of these enzymes going on in there. And it's not just, frankly, it's not all about the hops, contrary to what a lot of you crazy brewers think out there. it's this reaction, and you guys have heard me talk about the brew houses being a bioreactor. Because in the biotech industry, that's what they're called. You walk into some of these biotech companies that are producing bacterial or yeast-produced components, chemicals, medicines, and it looks like a brewery because it's the same damn thing. Anyway, yep. If you run that course, if you run through that whole course and then try to take something out of the liquid of the beer and leave everything else behind, they're so intertwined from a chemical engineering standpoint, it is a monumental challenge.
Yeah, like knitting a sweater and then removing the yellow.
Exactly. Oh. Yep. Just take the yellow one out, but don't mess with the structural integrity of the sweater. Very, very tough. And that's where the innovation comes in, is to say, this is a puzzle. How do we get just that color out?
Yeah, it's tough, and you can do it, and there are a number of ways to do it. And, you know, we went through them last time, but if one pays to have a – can you do like a three-minute synopsis of the different ways that happens or not really?
Yeah, sure. We can do that. So three ways to deal with this whole alcohol concentration thing. Just not have any present, period. So that means no fermentation. So you're not even going to allow the yeast anywhere near the wort. Is that beer? Is that, and that's something I was thinking of this morning, is that actually beer? I'd choose to believe no. If you're going the non-fermentation route, what is that? It is a sugar cereal liquid. And you can run it through the whole process, but there's no biotransformation going on there. There's no critter in there that's chewing stuff up and producing something else. So I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of hazy there for me. See what I did there? There's zero fermentation, right? Then there is what we call either reduced or arrested fermentation, where you let the yeast in there to do their deal, but then you stop it at a very precise point before it basically goes too far. So it's sort of like, yeah, you get a little bit of it, right? You let it go to produce some of its flavors, but you don't get the whole shebang.
And that's arrested from a temperature perspective, isn't it?
Correctly? Well, I mean, that's one of the ways to arrest the fermentation is to crash it, cold crash it. You know, take those yeast, because yeast, those critters, they want a very specific temperature in order to do their thing. So if you're keeping them nice and happy and warm at room temperature, and then you stick them in the freezer and cold crash the whole liquid, boom, game over. That's one way to do it. And then the final really other way to do it is to remove the alcohol removal.
That's the osmosis technique.
Well, that's a technique. There are several techniques in that branch of NA beer production, and they all have dramatic impacts on mouthfeel and flavor and stability.
Yeah, because you really are creating something else. You're creating a whole different chemical formula, and what we come to know, to your point before, about what is beer, what does beer mean to us, it is different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think of all the things I've tried, I would ever... There's nothing I've tried yet where I would mistake it for an alcoholic beer. I think I would go, huh, is this one of those hop seltzers, or is this an NA? I think I would know.
I've had a couple. Yeah, okay. That I thought, and they were dark beer stouts and porters. But certainly the lighter beers, there is a difference. But it's not bad. I don't think it's a bad difference. It's just different. And I don't want to know. I don't know which direction we want to go with this conversation, but the people that want to, you know, downplay or bash NA craft beer because it doesn't taste like what they're used to, that doesn't make it bad. It makes it different.
Yeah.
NA craft beer should not be put in the same category as hard seltzers.
It's so funny because I was just going to say to you, why is that any different than hard seltzer, given how your blood boils when the hard seltzer topic comes up?
So why should they not be put in the same category? Well, A, hard seltzers are all about alcohol. Mm. And frankly, I don't care what anybody says we make hard seltzers and it's so complicated. No, it isn't. Shut up. you're producing malt alcohol. Clear, and you're adding artificial / natural flavors to it. That's it. End of story. Compared to what it would take to make an NA beer from a brewing chops and technical prowess standpoint, they are mild. They're astronomical units apart from one another. That's what I think, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
But they're, yeah, NA beers are definitely more difficult to make well, because of these added steps that one has to go through to remove or arrest the alcohol production, but do as little, I don't want to say harm, but, you know, impact the flavor and aroma in the body as little as possible. Because that's, you're still after that beverage. I mean, that's what you want. So anything else is a compromise.
Right. And of course, there's been, you know, O'Doul's being the example, has been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And it's still around.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there, but it's
Sharps craft. Was another one, right?
Oh,
Sharps.
Yeah,
remember Sharps?
Uh-huh.
They're still around. And there's a few other, you know, and so some of those no alcohol beers like Heine 00 and others that are out there by the big guys, if there wasn't a market for these, do you think those big guys would be bothering with this?
Oh, no. No, no, no. There'd be no point. Now, granted, none of them have taken that to the extreme that they've taken their seltzer lines and whatnot, because that market just seems to be more exciting and popular for them. But you're right. There's no reason O'Doul's would still be around if it wasn't a thing. Look, we've seen variations from the big guys come and go over the years. Was it Miller that did Reserve? Mm-hmm. I loved that beer when it came out, and that's gone.
That's been gone a long time.
Mm-hmm. And that, I got a story about that one. but they, you know, to your point about if it wasn't selling, would they still keep it? No. There is no law that says you must produce X percentage of your beverage that is non-alcoholic to satisfy the FDA. No, that doesn't exist. No, nope. They wouldn't make it if they weren't selling it.
Right.
Now, in terms of who sells it, so I know you and I, since the last time we talked about it, have both explored a whole bunch of different companies.
Oh, yes.
And you seem to have more access to things than I do. But then again, in general for beer, you seem to have more access than I do. One thing that I'm finding, and it goes to the complication of the brewing process, is that you're seeing more and more of these non-alcoholic only vendors popping up. I know of very few breweries that have a non-alcoholic offering, I'll say. The big guys do it, certainly. And there's that the Bauhaus one, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. They're Nah, which I still think is the best name I've ever heard for a beer. Nah. Non-alcoholic Hells. Nah. Have never tried it, but just the name alone, best name ever. But for the most part, I know you and I are running into places that ship that exists solely to make non-alcoholic beer, whether it's Athletic Brewing Company or Bravis or Surreal,
Well-being.
Or Partake, Well-being, and distribution, they all ship. Their local distribution is a little, some of them are very localized. I think Athletic is the only one I'm seeing that appears to be more or less nationwide at this point.
Well, Bravis, I mean, they're out in California, San Diego. They're in your neck of the woods, or in my neck of the woods, so we can see those around.
I mean, Klosthaler is around.
Oh, everywhere. Yeah, German Klosthaler. Bitburger makes an NA that I like as far as a German lager is concerned. Very refreshing, very nice, and frankly, in many cases, suits my palate more than the current craft beer trends in the States, just because it's just too much. We talk about balance all the time. And frankly, these NA beers, because they have to spend, the brewers have to spend so much extra special attention to what they're removing and what they're putting back and blah, 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 they tend to be much, much more highly refined from a balance standpoint than most of these other craft beers I've had over the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. And they're sticking to the true styles for the most part, I'll say.
Well, that's true. I'll give you that. But there's some fun stuff out there. Like, I was looking at a peach pie ale this morning online that I'm like, huh, how did they make that? And that's a no alcohol. So they didn't use any fermentation on that. So I'm like, okay, what is that? Is that going to be more like you said earlier, Greg, like you're basically a barley pop, barley soda? Probably.
Yep.
Is that bad? I don't think it's bad. It's just different.
It is. And it depends on what you're going for and what the, I don't know, what the drinking experience is supposed to mean to you, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a psychological part of this. I was doing some stuff around the house yesterday, and it was 2 p.m, and I popped open an oatmeal stout from Bravis. I don't know why. I just was like, you know what? I'm not in the mood for soda. I'm not in the mood for any water. It's 2 p.m. I'm not quite ready to call it an end to the day, which is usually what happens if I start with a beer. I pop one open, and I was, I was standing on a ladder on my deck putting a canopy up, and I was out in the garage moving cars around and whatnot. But I was still popping a beer while I was doing it, mm-hmm. and it's a great flavor, and it's that flavor that I like.
Yep, me too. I would say that as things stand right now, my consumption of beer is 100% NA, and for lots of reasons. But as it pertains to this discussion, because in most cases it's just better balanced. Mm-hmm. I think there are now. Granted, there are some ones that I've had that are awful. That I'm like, how is this stuff still on the shelf? Mm-hmm. But for I would say the majority of what I've tried, it's what I would consider consumable. I wouldn't say mediocre to excellent. But it's taken some adventure. It's taken some sleuthing to find those. But at this point, and with the price point being the same or close to the same as craft, regular craft, why not?
Right, right. And again, it depends on what you're going for out of the drink. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're out at a bar with friends, very often the selection is limited. For the most part, this is an at-home drink because you're just not going to find it distributed.
Unfortunately.
In many places.
That's the case, yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny to see there's a Facebook group about NA beer, and it's funny to see people talking about, hey, I'm going on vacation to this area. does anyone know where I can get some good NA beer? Because it really is very, very store specific. And people telling stories of them bringing in some NA to give to the bartender at their favorite restaurant and saying, would you consider keeping some of this around? Because I think you'd get a market for it here.
Right.
The consumers are becoming the best advocates for it.
Yep. And I love that. Evangelists. But I question my own interest in it. Is it because I do truly find many of them having much more craftswomanship behind the manufacture than a lot of the stuff that's on the market today that's full alcohol? I mean, my God, it's such a far swing from where we were 10 years ago, 8 years ago, where it was, you know, more alcohol, new yeast strains being produced that are alcohol tolerant, so you can get 10, 12% pretty easy. Now it's going the other way, where yeast companies are looking to produce strains that produce low alcohol concentration, but still allow the fermentation process to continue. So you get all of those ancillary byproducts of fermentation.
And that would be the home run, would be some chemical, biological way of fermenting with almost no alcohol.
Correct.
Which is counterintuitive. It's actually, that's not what we're looking for. It's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I mean, you're fermenting, but you're, maybe the fermentation products are not ethyl alcohol. Mm-hmm. Or it is to a very small percentage. That's aerobic fermentation. You can have anaerobic. You know, so that's where you get into lactic acids and all that kind of stuff too. But all that heavy sciencey science aside.
Yes. So I think the reason we initially thought about doing a second wave on this is that we both experienced many, many more of them since last time. And to, you know, I had mentioned to you that for me as a porter stout, you know, kind of person, the big difference that I'm finding is I want to talk about mouthfeel and aroma and the things that make a beer a beer. I mean, to me, you know, as a porter guy, as an example, there's a perfect point on a porter where it's creamy without being too creamy, where it's got some carbonation but not overly carbonated. Like there's just a perfect flow into my gullet of porter. And I'm finding with the NA beers, since I don't want my initial reaction to be, oh, that's a beer-flavored soda, because that's what a lot of you are thinking, is that, oh, it's a beer-flavored soda. No. And that's not what it should be. And some of them are, but that's not what it should be.
I agree with that. So, I mean, where do you want to go with that? I mean, what do you want to talk about? How it's done, or where the gaps are, or what the chemistry is? What do you want to talk about?
I think the gaps, I'll tell you the gaps I'm seeing, and you can tell me what the chemistry is.
Okay.
Or how they fix it.
Sure.
So the stouts, for example, because that's where I've been leaning with a couple of them, and Bravis makes a nice one, and Athletic makes several of them, and there are a few others that I've tried as well. I know you said that Surreal Porter is quite good.
Yeah, the 17 Mile I like quite a bit.
It's interesting, because there's definitely more of a heaviness to those than the IPAs I've tried and the other NAs, but there's still a creaminess missing. I'm not talking about that lactose crap creaminess, none of that. Don't. If that's your suggestion, just move on to Joe Rogan right now. I don't want to hear from you. I want none of it.
As a matter of fact, drop off Patreon too, you bastard.
Get out. No lactose, if that's your suggestion.
Wow.
Within 10 minutes of dropping this, Mark's going to put something on the Discord about me and lactose.
I want a shirt in the Tee Public with your face on it, the Bar Sinister, that says no lactose.
No one will buy a picture with my t-shirt with my face on it.
I think they would because it would be funny as hell. I would buy one.
It probably would be funny as hell, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so mouthfeel.
Mouthfeel. Let's talk mouthfeel, because that initial reaction, I mean, aroma and flavor and all that, yes, but to me, at least, especially for the dark beers, the mouthfeel is so critical.
Okay, holy crap, that's a lot to unpack.
I can wait.
How far into this are we? Okay, so I guess you're saying the mouth. We have to have a benchmark against which to measure your assessment of mouthfeel, and we're going to use a standard craft beer, whatever, porter, let's say, or stout. In that liquid, you've got a lot going on, right? You've got a malty sweetness there. You've got a bit of astringency, usually coming from the dark roasted malt. So that's going to come through into an NA beer too. That's just going to, as you're still making wort the same way you would make wort any other way, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
You're adding hops at the same time, so that the astringency from those hops are going to be there in the wort, not necessarily in the finished beer. That's going to change. So you're going to end up with this liquid that comes out of the mash tun that is ready for fermentation or not. And I think this is the point at which the first major decision needs to be made about how you are going to affect the physical characteristics of this liquid. Are you going to ferment it at all or not? So if it's going to be no fermentation, you're left with sugar water. That, to me, is really not a lot different than making a seltzer, except for the fact there's no alcohol in it.
Yeah. It's now, soda.
It's soda at that point. Barley pop, as my grandmother used to call it, which used to be a thing. If you're going to ferment it, this is where you've got a couple of decisions to make. If you're going to do one of these arrested or short fermentations, you're going to allow the critters to do their things in there. You're going to be producing some alcohol. You're going to have biotransformation of some of these hop aroma compounds. So everything's fairly normal as far as beer production, until you stop it, because you're stopping the process before the yeast says they're done. So this is very complex. I don't want to get too much into it, but at this point, you've got a mixture in the, what we'll call beer, of sugars, of simple sugars and branched sugars, which are important, maltodextrins. All these things lead to mouthfeel, like body, as we talk about body of a beer, like how thick is it in your mouth, right? We counteract that by astringency in the hops and the alcohol concentration. Because alcohol is there, it's got a sting, it's got a burn, and it has a flavor component. It's just not there to get you drunk. So if we stop that process, we're imbalancing our expectation. So if we make the beer with the same sort of malty body that we would expect in a non-NA beer, and then you arrest the process such that you imbalance the liquid, you're going to end up with something that is probably too heavy.
Hmm.
So you'd have to dial back your grain bill and probably even change the blend of malts that you're putting into it in order to balance the density of the liquid. Because adding alcohol is going to change the density. That's how we measure the rate of fermentation is by liquid density,
yep,
hydrometer. So there's that part. And then if we look at alcohol removal, that's a whole nother can of worms. Because you're not going to remove the alcohol without removing other stuff. Mostly sure. Other aroma compounds. And many of those aroma compounds are coming from the hops, as well as some of these other, like isoamyl acetate and things like that, that are associated with, quote, beer, the flavor of beer. And those are actually come off as a gas. So if you're doing alcohol removal, you're removing a lot of those aromatic compounds that, as part of the flavor and mouthfeel of a beer experience, you're further imbalancing it.
Ah.
So people say, well, can't you put that stuff back in? But yes, you can. You can actually remove that, you know, alcohol and whatever else is going to come off with it, and then take that goo and separate out the alcohol from that and put everything else back. But now you're putting back a concentrate into something that wasn't concentrated to begin with. So you can see how this balance that we're used to seeing in a craft beer house, in a brew house, quickly go out of whack.
Oh, sure.
There's so many variables here that one has to tweak in order to find that sweet spot. And frankly, there's so little research done on this. You have to find it by doing. And believe me, the brewers that do find it and land on it, it is freaking trade secret.
Oh, I believe it. I do. And it kind of lends to the idea that what makes more sense, doing this as a fully NA brewery or doing it as part of your entire lineup. It may be something that some, I'd be curious to talk to some brewers who don't have an NA beer in their lineup, which would be most of them. Mm-hmm. And if their response would, I doubt the response would be there's no market for it. It would probably more be that is just another level that I'm not willing to pursue. There's too much going on there.
There's too many hurdles for them, mm-hmm. mostly equipment. Wow. Because I think the long-term consistency of NA craft beer lies in the right equipment, and that's going to be like membrane filtration, reverse osmosis, and the lower cost lower cost equipment. So the lower barrier to entry would be something like vacuum distillation. But you're taking off all of the aroma compounds, not all of them, but most of them, from the hops, because alcohol boils at 173.1 degrees Fahrenheit at one atmosphere, so at sea level. So dialing that in is important, but you're also going to be flashing off these other aroma compounds that boil or flash off at lower temperature. Right. And then people say, well, I just want to add the temperature. I'll put a vacuum on it because you can reduce the vapor pressure and use less heat. Doesn't matter, Batman. You're still going to boil off those those aroma compounds. So now what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to add a bunch more back, or I'm going to overhop it so that there's something left. Okay, you can do that. And I find this in several of these like IPA NAs I've had that are so astringent and vegetal because I can immediately tell how they are removing their alcohol. I'm like, this has been vacuum distilled.
And it sounds like what they're doing, they're going against our cardinal rule, which is they're screwing up the balance in order to make it work and the hop balance.
They're saying, okay, I know I'm going to flash off a bunch of these aroma compounds, so I've got to have to front load this pretty heavy, so I've got something coming out the back end. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I get it. The problem there is you're also loading up on polyphenols and vegetal matter, tannins, and all these other compounds, and alpha-beta acids that you don't necessarily want more of.
Right.
And so you end up with this really overly astringent beer that is not good. Which, hypothesis, which is why I think I have yet to find a really quality, well-balanced NA IPA. Like I had one from Lagunitas just the other day because it's new to the area here, even though they're in Chicago. It's called IPNA.
Points for the name. Great name. Yeah,
great name. Great name. Beer is awful. Sorry, anybody out there who's like from Facebook group or whatever that loves that beer. I think I texted you, Greg. I said, remember from our
the Citra.
The CTZ.
Oh, yes,
from our Harvest Report episode or whatever, Market Report episode. I'm like, I think I know where all that CTZ went because damn.
And that's like, not a good damn.
No, it isn't. It's was astringent and vegetal and sulfury, and like, what the hell?
Wow.
What the hell? Well, what the hell is you overhop the front end so that you have something left in the back end after you remove the alcohol, and boo. Yeah, not good.
No, whereas I know you've said, what is it, Wellbeing's Intentional IPA is quite good. I have not gotten my hands on that
right
yet.
That one's pretty good because their alcohol removal method is different. Right. So they're sort of on the higher end of alcohol removal from an equipment standpoint. So they can do membrane filtration and reverse osmosis. I'm not sure which one, but you can selectively partition what you're removing, and you can have several steps, several different filters basically that pull out certain attributes. And then you can say, okay, this one's got the alcoholic one, so I'm going to toss that one, and everything else I'm going to put back in the liquid. And so that's probably the most accurate way and predictable, calculatable way to get an end product that's well-balanced. It's also the most expensive and technically challenging way.
Sure. I think what we've seen, though, this Facebook group has been funny because people treat this like a collection. They show their garages and there's just a lineup of, 50 different kinds of NA beer. I don't know anyone who collects Coke and Sprite like that.
Right.
So I don't quite understand the need to have all of them. But One thing I would say to our listeners, if you're a beer drinker, like we are, and you're looking at this going, well, why? A lot of these NA beer companies, when you read their stories, started up from either an alcohol issue, someone having an issue with alcohol, or just a health issue. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's not about the alcohol. Sometimes it's about other things that are not, I'll say, alcoholism related, but literal allergies and intolerances to alcohol from a physical perspective.
Mm-hmm. Medical issues, you know.
Medical issues.
Somebody who, like me, who's on meds that really shouldn't be having alcohol, but mm-hmm. I love beer. So. Yeah.
so this is an option. It's not having, I guess what I'm trying to say is that having a non-alcoholic beer is not like joining a 12-step program where you're admitting that, well, I don't need to have that because I don't have a problem. That's not what this is about.
Nope.
It's a nice alternative.
It absolutely is. And let me tell you, no headaches or hangovers and better sleep mm-hmm. has been awesome.
The loads and loads of posts on that Facebook page, you know, day after Christmas of, this is the first time I've woken up without a hangover and before 10 a.m. on Christmas, mm-hmm. God knows how long. And again, it's a wonderful tool for folks that do have a problem and that are trying to, you know, it's like a nicotine patch of sorts who are trying to wean themselves away. But it's also a great, you know, for someone like me who still has beer on a very regular basis, mm-hmm. regular beer, this is just a nice counterpoint. And I don't know, maybe that's indicative of a problem in that it's 2 p.m, I'm working, I really am in the mood for a beer. I can actually have one without it being detrimental to what I'm trying to get done.
I was going to bring one up and open it this morning, go, like, good morning, but I'm
breakfast
out.
Beer.
Yeah. I've got, no, I don't have any.
You're out. Oh, Lord.
Yes, I'm out. I drank 3 yesterday and I'm like, oh man, I should have saved one for the morning. Oh, well.
You didn't spill any because last time I was on a video call with you, one like went all over your chair. There.
Yeah, that was a Bravis Amber, which I was sad about. Yeah, that was no good.
That's a shame. The spillage was no good. The beer was good.
The beer is great. Yeah, I like that beer. And I'm not an amber fan usually. Again, because they're usually too astringent and overhopped, but this one was not. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're dropping names because that's who we are.
Right. And honestly, we're dropping names because there's no one out there who is going to get mad at us for saying something nice or not nice about their beer because mm-hmm. none of the NA companies are, you know, are funding us or giving us any type of sponsorship. If you'd like to be one of those companies, you know where to find us.
Please send samples.
We're not shy. We'll go to a every other week NA topic if we need to, if that's what it takes.
I would say we would do it depending on what we're offered.
Well, yeah, that's yes. Yeah. That's the idea.
Nice.
Anywho, so you know, we that was a lot about mouthfeel and sensory, and wow, we're running long already.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, and I'm sure for you, we're going to keep on trying these things. It really is, to your point, true innovation. It's not, yep. You know, adding, you know, making something into a creamsicle slushy is not innovation.
No. And I mean, let's face it. I will continue to consume regular craft beer, certainly as part of my job at Siebel and for sensory analysis and things of that nature. So that's not going to go away. It's not like, oh, James is on the wagon or whatever. No, again, let's get rid of that stigma that the only reason is going to consume NA is because they have an alcohol issue. That's not it at all. My primary driver is the fact that they're just, and for the most part, better balanced. And that's where the true innovation is in the craft industry.
So I'd say this would be a partially soapbox episode and partially sciencey science episode, which doesn't normally combine very well. But yeah, it's props to all these companies that are experimenting and getting into the science of all of it to create a better product, because there is a market need for it out there. And it does fill a niche that I think all of us, you know, even alcohol drinkers, can get some value out of. Clearly, we've had our coffee today.